So I was requested to do a special class on the items of knowledge from the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, verses 8 through 12. So I don't think we're going to chant it responsibly. We may not have time anyway. There's a huge purport. So, oh, a very big purport. Oh, Krishna. I don't know if we have time to read the purport. It may take 40 minutes just to read the purport. So, we could try breezing through it. Yeah, we'll breeze through it. I mean, that's where the nectar is. So we'll just try to finish the whole purport and then discuss whatever time we have left. That'll be good. So, Srimad Bhagavad Gita, as it is, chapter 13, texts 8 through 12. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Ananidvangadam vitvam mahimsa chantirarjamam acharyopasanam saucham stairyamatma vinigraha indriyarteshu vairagyam anahankar evacha Janamrityu jiravyadi dukkadoshana darshanam asaktirana vishvanga putradara grihadishu nityangcha samasittatvam ishtanishtopapatishu maichanyanya yogena bhaktiravya vicharvini vivikta desha sevitam aratir janasang sudhi Ajatma gana nityatvam tatva ganarta darshanam echads ganam iti paroktam agyanam yadatol yata. Translation purport by Srila Prabhupada. Humility, pridelessness, non-violence, tolerance, simplicity, approaching a bona fide spiritual master, cleanliness, steadiness, self-control, renunciation of the objects of sense gratification, absence of false ego, the perception of the evil of birth and death, old age and disease, detachment, freedom from entanglement with children, wife, home, and the rest, even-mindedness amid pleasant and unpleasant events, constant and unalloyed devotion to me, aspiring to live in a solitary place, detachment from the general mass of people, accepting the importance of self-realization and philosophical search for the absolute, all of these I declare to be knowledge, and besides this, whatever there may be is ignorance. Good morning, Brad. If you're within these, you're okay. If you're not, you're in trouble. Purport, this process of knowledge is sometimes misunderstood by less intelligent men as being the interaction of the field of activity. But actually, this is the real process of knowledge. If one accepts this process, then the possibility of approaching the absolute truth exists. This is not the interaction of the 24 elements as described before. This is actually the means to get out of the entanglement of these elements. The embodied soul is entrapped with the body, which is a casing made of the 24 elements, and the process of knowledge as described here is the means to get out of it. Of all the descriptions of the process of knowledge, the most important point is described in the first verse, the first line of the 11th verse. Mai chanyaya yogena bhaktir avyapacharini. So in other words, if you can't handle all 11 points, just catch this one point and you'll be in good shape. Prabhupada explains the translation, the process of knowledge terminates in unalloyed devotional service to the Lord. So, if one does not approach or is not able to approach the transcendental service of the Lord, then the other 19 items are of no particular value. In other words, that will either make you or break you. If you come to pure devotional service, which we'll be giving a mini course on Thursday and Friday, by the way, if you can come to this point of pure devotional service, then you've got it made, really. Even if you can't, you know, go into all the details of the other 19 items, if you can just cover this one point, then everything else is included. And if you do all the other 19, but you neglect this one point, you're nowhere. So this is the main thing, unalloyed devotional service of the Lord. Prabhupada continues, but if one takes the devotional service in full Krishna consciousness, the other 19 items automatically develop within him. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 5.18.12, yasyasti bhaktir bhagavat yukinchana sarvayir gunaishtatra samastate sada. All the good qualities of knowledge develop in one who has attained the stage of devotional service. The principle of accepting a spiritual master, as mentioned in the 8th verse, is essential. Even for one who takes the devotional service, it is the most important. Transcendental life begins when one accepts a bona fide spiritual master, the Supreme Personality of God in Sri Krishna. Clearly states here that this process of knowledge is the actual path. Anything speculated beyond this is nonsense. So actually there's two items of these total list that are important. The most essential is pure devotional service, and tagging along behind it as being an essential item is accepting a spiritual master. Now we're going to go into the list. As for the knowledge outlined here, the items may be analyzed as follows. Humility means that one should not be anxious to have the satisfaction of being honored by others. The material conception of life makes us very eager to receive honor from others, but the point of view of a man in perfect knowledge, who knows that he is not his body, anything, honor or dishonor pertaining to this body, is useless. One should not be hankering after this material deception. People are very anxious to be famous for their religion, and consequently sometimes it is found that without understanding the principles of religion, one enters into some group which is not actually following religious principles, and then wants to advertise himself as a religious mentor. As for actual advancement in spiritual science, one should have a test to see how far he is progressing. He can judge by these items. Nonviolence is generally taken to mean not killing or destroying the body, but actually nonviolence means not to put others into distress. People in general are trapped by ignorance in the material concept of life, and they perpetually suffer material pains. So unless one elevates people to the spiritual knowledge, one is practicing violence. One should try his best to distribute real knowledge to the people so that they may become enlightened and leave this material entanglement. That is nonviolence. So, if we're in the mood of being preachers, we are nonviolent. And if we are not preachers, we are violent. Tolerance means that one should be practiced to bear insult and dishonor from others. If one is engaged in the advancement of spiritual knowledge, there will be so many insults and much dishonor from others. This is expected because material nature is so constituted. Even a boy like Prahlad, who only 5 years old, was engaged in the cultivation of spiritual knowledge, was endangered when his father became antagonistic to his devotion. The father tried to kill him so many ways, but Prahlad tolerated him. So there may be many impediments to making advancement in spiritual knowledge, but we should be tolerant and continue our progress with determination. Simplicity means that without diplomacy, one should be so straightforward that he can disclose the real truth even to an enemy. As for acceptance of the spiritual master, that is essential, because without the instruction of a bona fide spiritual master, one cannot progress in spiritual science. One should approach the spiritual master with all humility and offer him all services so that he will be pleased to bestow his blessings upon the disciple. Because a bona fide spiritual master is a representative of Krishna, if he bestows any blessings upon his disciple, that will make the disciple immediately advanced without the disciples following the regulative principles. Or the regulative principles will be easier for one who has served the spiritual master without reservation. You may say, wow, this is great. I want to follow the regulative principles. I can just get the mercy of the spiritual master. I don't have to worry about anything else. Well, we have to understand the meaning of this. A good example is 26 Second Avenue. They weren't ready to follow so many regulated principles. But they loved Prabhupada, or Swamiji, as they called him then. He was everything for them. Just to be with Swamiji and to make Swamiji smile, you see. And because of that, they had that desire to please Srila Prabhupada, you see. And there, then all regulated principles automatically came, you see, because they had that desire to please Prabhupada. Continuing here, cleanliness is essential for making advancement in spiritual life. There are two kinds of cleanliness, external and internal. External cleanliness means taking a bath. But for internal cleanliness, one has to think of Krishna always and chant Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This process cleans the accumulated dust of past karma from the mind. Steadiness means that one should be very determined to make progress in spiritual life. Without such determination, one cannot make tangible progress. And self-control means that one should not accept anything which is detrimental to the path of spiritual progress. One should become accustomed to this and reject anything which is against the path of spiritual progress. This is real renunciation. The senses are so strong that they are always anxious to have sense gratification. One should not cater to these demands, which are not necessary. The senses should only be gratified to keep the body fit, so that one can discharge his duty in advancing in Krishna consciousness, spiritual life. The most important and uncontrollable sense is the tongue. If one can control the tongue, then there is every possibility of controlling the other senses. The function of the tongue is to taste and to vibrate. Therefore, by systematic regulation, the tongue should always be engaged in tasting the remnants of foodstuffs offered to Krishna and chanting Hare Krishna. As far as the eyes are concerned, they should not be allowed to see anything but the beautiful form of Krishna. That will control the eyes. Similarly, the ears should be engaged in hearing about Krishna and the nose in smelling the flowers offered to Krishna. This is the process of devotional service, and it is understood here that Bhagavad Gita is simply expounding the science of devotional service. Devotional service is the main and sole objective. Unintelligent commentators on the Bhagavad Gita try to divert the mind and the reader to other subjects. But there is no subject in Bhagavad Gita other than devotional service. False ego means accepting this body as oneself. When one understands that he is not his body and his spirit soul, he comes to his real ego. Ego is there. False ego is condemned, but not real ego. In Vedic literature, Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 1.4.10, it is said, Aham Brahmasmi. I am spirit, I am Brahman, This I am, the sense of self, that also exists in the liberated stage of self-realization. This sense of I am is ego, but when the sense of I am is applied to this false body, it is false ego. So ego means identity. When the sense of self is applied to reality, that is real ego. There are some philosophers who say that we should give up our ego, but we cannot give up our ego because ego means identity. We ought, of course, to give up the false identification with the body. One should try to understand the distress of accepting birth, death, old age, and disease. There are descriptions in various Vedic literatures of birth. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, the world of the unborn, the child's stay in the womb of the mother is suffering, etc. Its suffering, etc., are all very graphically described. It should be thoroughly understood that birth is distressful. Because we forget how much distress we have suffered within the womb of the mother, we do not make any solution to the repetition of birth and death. Similarly, at the time of death, there are all kinds of sufferings, and they are also mentioned in the authoritative scriptures. These should be discussed. As far as disease and old age are concerned, everyone gets practical experience. No one wants to be diseased, and no one wants to become old, but there is no avoiding these. Unless we have a pessimistic view of this material life, considering the distresses of birth, death, old age, and disease, and there is no impetus for our making advancement in spiritual life. As for detachment from children, wife, and home, it is not meant that one should have no feeling for these. They are natural objects of affection. But when they are not favorable for spiritual progress, then one should not be attached to them. The best process for making the home pleasant is Krishna consciousness. If one is in full Krishna consciousness, he can make his home very happy because this process of Krishna consciousness is very easy. One need only chant Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Accept the remnants of foodstuffs offered to Krishna. Have some discussion on books like Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, and engage oneself in deity worship. These four things will make one happy. One should train the family members in this way. The family members can sit down morning and evening and chant, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. If one can mold his family life in this way, till develop Krishna consciousness following these four principles, then there is no need to change from family life to renounced life. But if it is not congenial, not favorable for spiritual advancement, then family life should be abandoned. One must sacrifice everything to realize or serve Krishna, just as Arjuna did. Arjuna did not want to kill his family members, but when he understood that these family members were impediments to his Krishna consciousness, his Krishna realization, he accepted the instruction of Krishna and fought and killed them. In all cases, one should be detached from the happiness and distress of family life, because in this world, one can never be fully happy or fully miserable. Happiness and distress are concomitant factors of material life. One should learn to tolerate, as advised in the Bhagavad Gita. One can never restrict the coming and going of happiness and distress, so one should be detached from the materialistic way of life and be automatically equipoised in both cases. Generally, when we get something desirable, we are very happy. And if we get something undesirable, we are very distressed. But if we are actually in the spiritual position, these things will not agitate us. To reach that stage, we have to practice unbreakable devotional service. Devotional service to Krishna without deviation means engaging oneself in the nine processes of devotional service, chanting, hearing, worshipping, offering respect, etc., as described in the last verse of the 9th chapter. That process should be followed. Naturally, when one is adapted to the spiritual way of life, he will not want to mix with materialistic men. That would go against his grain. One may test himself by seeing how far he is inclined to live in a solitary place without unwanted association. Naturally, a devotee has no taste for unnecessary sporting or cinema going or enjoying some social function because he understands that these are simply a waste of time. There are many research scholars and philosophers who study sex life or some other subject, but according to Bhagavad Gita, such research work and philosophical speculation have no value. That is more or less nonsensical. According to Bhagavad Gita, one should make research by philosophical discretion into the nature of the soul. One should make research to understand the self. That is recommended here. As far as self-realization is concerned, it is clearly stated here that bhakti yoga is especially practical. As soon as there is a question of devotion, one must consider the relationship between the super soul and the individual soul. The individual soul and the super soul cannot be one, at least not in the bhakti conception, the devotional conception of life. This service of the individual soul to the supreme soul is eternal, nityam, as it is clearly stated. So, bhakti, or devotional service, is eternal. One should be established in that philosophical conviction. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 1-11, this is explained. Vadanti tat tatva vidas tatvam yad jnanam anvayam. Those who are actually knowers of the Absolute Truth know that the Self is realized in three phases as Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. Bhagavan is the last word in the realization of the Absolute Truth. Therefore, one should reach up to that platform of understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead and thus engage in the devotional service of the Lord. That is the perfection of knowledge. Beginning from practicing humility up to the point of realization of the Absolute Truth, the Absolute Personality of Godhead, this process is just like a staircase beginning from the ground floor and going up to the top floor. Now on this staircase, there are so many people who have reached the first floor, the second or third floor, etc. But unless one reaches the top floor, which is the understanding of Krishna, he is at a lower stage of knowledge. If anyone wants to compete with God and at the same time make advancement in spiritual knowledge, he will be frustrated. It is clearly stated that without humility, understanding is not truly possible. To think oneself God is most puffed up. Although the living entity is always being kicked by the stringent laws of material nature, he still thinks, "I am God," out of ignorance. The beginning of knowledge, therefore, is amanitva, humility. One should be humble and know that he is subordinate to the Supreme Lord. Due to rebellion against the Supreme, one becomes subordinate to material nature. One must know and be convinced of this truth. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jatapadakamanam Shri Gurun Vaishnavam Sha Shri Rupam Sagradatam Sahagana Raganatan Vitam Tam Sajimam Sadhaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitam. There's so many points and we only have a few minutes here. So, where to begin? If we could do like, you know, Brahma, make a, you know, squeeze a whole year into 1 minute, then we might be able to really in full describe these different items in detail. Brahmaji, you know, in the Brahma Vimohana Leela, he went away briefly and then came back to see what was the result of his little trick he had played. But that was a whole year for the devotees. His one moment was an entire year. Of course, he thought he was playing a trick. He got out-tricked, the supreme trickster. So anyway, we don't have such potency. But we can hit on some high points here. As I was reading it this morning, some points jumped out of the page at me, like, even mindedness amid pleasant and unpleasant events. This is a very important quality. I remember when as a new brahmachari back in the old days, back in 71, when I first read this, it was a little amazing. Prabhupada said, don't be disturbed by happiness. I was going, what? Don't be disturbed by happiness. I mean, what's Prabhupada talking about? I mean, I love happiness, you know. Don't be disturbed by it. I don't think I have that problem of being disturbed by happiness. So what does Prabhupada mean? Well, here's an example. Or you can get carried away by it. Let's say, you know, you lead a really good kirtan, the devotees are going, wow, that was a great kirtan. And you think, yeah, I'm a great kirtan leader. See, that's an example. You get carried away. Think, yeah, I'm great. The devotees really like my kirtan. Yeah, I'm great, I'm great. That's an example, getting carried away, see, by some pleasant thing. You get intoxicated by some pleasant thing and lose your, you know, your transcendental composure and forget that, yeah, I'm just an insignificant, you know, bug begging for the mercy of Guru Krishna and Vaishnavas, you know. So that's an example of not being carried away by something pleasant. And another nice example is Prabhupada himself. You may have heard the story, but it's so nice to repeat this story. Prabhupada was struggling like anything to get his Bhagavad Gita manuscript published. And he wasn't having any luck. He engaged different disciples in trying to do that. Rai Ram, who was the BTG man, the editor of BTG at the time, he engaged him in trying to do it. He had no success. They even had Allen Ginsberg, who's a published author who has connections with a publisher, and even he couldn't get it published. So just being handed down from one disciple to another, okay, you know, one disciple couldn't do it, it was handed to another one. And finally it came to Brahmananda and he was going, oh, what can I do, you know? How is it possible we can ever get a publisher for, you know, an unknown Indian Swami? And so anyway, but then they had recorded that album, you know, that Hare Krishna, and the Happening label, that wonderful recording that all of us love, and actually the Beatles got a hold of it, and they went wild on it when they were cruising through the Greek islands right before they hit the big time. They were singing that the same tune they got off the album. It's a wonderful album, you know. And so anyway, they had advertised it somewhere, and so an order came in for that record album from Millencolin, somebody was at Millencolin Company, one of the major publishers. And so Brahmananda brought this to Prabhupada. He was, wow, somebody from Millencolin Company is ordering your record. He was saying, this could be the break, you know, for getting the Bhagavad Gita published. And so Prabhupada told him, yeah, don't mail them the record, you go there personally, fulfill this order. So Brahmananda put on his best, his coat and tie, and went uptown, you know. From the down there, from the lower, the hippie quarters down the Lower East Side, he got on the subway, went up to the, you know, business center where all the executives were there. He went in there all excited and alive and, wow, like Macmillan Company. And then he went to find the person. It turns out just some accountant, you know. It had nothing to do with the publishing. He's going, oh, what to do, you know. But Prabhupada told him, when you meet someone, you tell them, I have a spiritual master, Indian Swami, and he wants to publish the Bhagavad Gita. You just tell them that. Prabhupada instructed him. So, he's with this person who has nothing to do with publishing, thinking, oh, he's, what to do. But then somebody walks in. Some man walks into the accountant's office. It happens to be the person who's in charge of the Indian public, you know, the Indian philosophy section of Macmillan Company. And Brahmananda says, I have an Indian Swami shaking. I have an Indian Swami who has a Bhagavad Gita manuscript he would like to publish. And he was thinking, you know, it's going to be hopeless that Prabhupada told me I have to say that. And then this man lit up like the 4th of July in the U.S. He just lit up. He said, oh, you have an Indian Swami, and he has a Bhagavad Gita manuscript. He would like to publish it. We will publish it without even seeing the manuscript. Normally, you have to submit the manuscript. They look it over with a fine-tooth comb, and they say, no, reject it. But now, even without seeing the manuscript, he's immediately saying, yes, we will publish it. So Brahmananda, he's just like flying in a euphoria cloud, you know. He just felt like he was floating all the way back down to 26 Second Avenue to give Prabhupada the news. He was so excited and so happy, you know, amid this great pleasant event. And we told Prabhupada, did Prabhupada get excited? No. Prabhupada was acting like he already knew it was going to happen. Okay. And that's a very good example, you see. Even though it was a huge breakthrough for our movement, Macmillan Company, a major, major publisher in the world, agreed to publish Bhagavad Gita as it is, and Prabhupada just took it, okay. So, in this way, you see, Prabhupada didn't get all giddy and start jumping up and down like a little excited little kid, no. He just took it as Krishna. You see, the pure devotee, he sees the loving hand of Krishna acting at every minute. He always sees the loving hand of Krishna because everything that's actually happening here is the arrangement of Krishna. Everything. As Prabhupada told us on his deathbed, he said, everything is acting and moving under the direction of Krishna. This consciousness is Krishna consciousness. So if we will always see how the loving mercy of Krishna is manifested in the pleasant events, and the unpleasant events, equally manifested, then we will not be carried away in either direction. The warning is, if you get carried away by the good stuff, get all excited and jumping up and down, intoxicated, then what are you setting yourself up for? Becoming depressed when things go bad, you see. So if you don't want to be depressed when things go bad, don't get excited when things go great. That's the secret. Just always see that Krishna is very kind. He's put me in this situation so that I can serve him nicely, so that I can increase my... Actually, every situation Krishna puts us into is to help us increase our Krishna consciousness, to help us increase our devotion in this way, increase, 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 which means coming closer to Krishna. Krishna wants us back. As Prabhupada says, much more than we want to go back, Krishna wants us back. So every single situation we find ourselves in, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, and even 366 days a year on leap year, every single situation is Krishna's arrangement to bring us closer and closer and closer to him. Krishna, we are the fish, Krishna has the hook in our mouth, and he's reeling us in. You see? So if we take that, everything is Krishna's mercy. Even the difficult things. Kunti was specially favoring the difficult things. Vipada shanti tatvatatra tatra jagan guru bhavanam darshanam yachada punarbhava darshanam. My dear Lord, please be very kind to me and put me into great difficulty. Please bestow me that mercy upon me and put me into great difficulty, my Lord, because when I'm in difficulty, I'm always seeing you, and I'm seeing you, I know that I will no longer be seeing that birth, death, old age, and disease. You see? So we may not be so advanced to feelingly beg for misery, as Kunti was begging. But at least when it comes, we should try to remember this is also Krishna's mercy. You see? It's difficult, and it's easy for me to sit here and say these things. Put me in a miserable situation. And it's not so easy, just like we landed in Delhi the other day and not one piece of our luggage made it. So I was beating myself on the head with, Bhagavad Gita 5:20, you know, which is the verse that's telling you to be equipoised in happiness and distress. You know, it's admittedly, it's not easy to do that, but we have, if we make the endeavor, Krishna will help us. You see? Krishna will help us. If he sees that we're endeavoring to be equipoised amid the pleasant and unpleasant events, he will be very kind and he will help us to do that. You can see them as like waves on the ocean. You see, the ups are the pleasant and the downs are the unpleasant. Waves on the ocean, you see. But where do the devotees go in that ocean? Do they remain on the surface of that ocean, where the ups and downs are constantly buffeting whatever is there on the surface? No. The devotee goes deep, 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 deep into that ocean, you see. And the deeper you go, the less you feel the effect of the waves. There could even be a raging hurricane on the surface of the ocean. But if one goes deep, 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 deep into that ocean, there will not be even the slightest tinge of an effect of that hurricane. So, in this Krishna consciousness process, we are meant to go deep, deep, deep into that ocean of bhakti. Bhakti rasamrita sindhu, that nectarian bhakti ocean. The deeper we go, the less we will be affected by these dualities. And finally we will reach that point where the dualities become absolutely non-existent. And we're simply relishing the bliss of loving relationship with Krishna 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So what other points are here besides that point? Being free from entanglement with children, wife, home, and the rest. Prabhupada gives a very balanced perspective. Not that everyone has to, you know, walk out of the house and pick up a danda, become a sannyasi. No, Prabhupada doesn't say it. He's saying you do whatever is favorable for Krishna consciousness. You see, that is the higher principle. We are not interested in detachment, nor are we interested in attachment. We are interested in Krishna consciousness. So if one's family life is actually favorable for his Krishna consciousness, he doesn't need to give it up. He doesn't need to become a sannyasi. Even though that is a natural progress in the varnashram system, brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyas. If one's family life is Krishna conscious, as Prabhupada indicates here, one does not have to take sannyas. Although one should become vanaprastha. You see, that's mandatory. Everyone should at least become, that means, no longer interested in having more children, acquiring more money, etc., etc. One should reach a point of being very interested in becoming detached from material sense gratification and simply absorbed in Krishna consciousness 24 hours a day. So these are important points. As we explained in the beginning, we can re-emphasize now the essence of the whole thing is pure devotional service, And essential in that development of pure devotional service is to have a bona fide spiritual master, acharyo pasanam. One must approach a bona fide spiritual master because it is by the mercy of Guru. Yasha prasadat bhagavat prasado, yasha prasadat nagati kutopi. It's only by the mercy of the bona fide spiritual master that we can make any advancement. If we think that we can neglect the principle of the pure devotee, the spiritual master, and go to Krishna consciousness, we are living in a deep, dense, dark delusion. That's a fact. Deep, dense, dark delusion. Name bhaktas jana parata. Let's see. Ye me bhakta jana parata. Na me bhaktas tate janaha. Mad bhakchanam che ye bhaktas te me bhakta tamamata. Krishna says, you think you're my devotee? Nope, you're not my devotee. If you think you're my devotee, you're nonsense. You're not my devotee. But if you're the devotee of my devotee, then you're my devotee. You see. So what does it mean to accept a spiritual master? It means you become the devotee of Krishna's devotee, and that's the only way we can become devotees. The only way. Therefore, for us, the spiritual master is as good as God. He's as good as God. He's God's manifestation. The mercy manifestation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is our spiritual master. Without His mercy, nowhere we are, you see. And by His blessings, even a dog can swim across the ocean, or a lame man can cross over the mountain, or a dumb, incompetent speaker can deliver eloquent speeches that can attract thousands and millions of people to Krishna consciousness. So how much we are dependent on the blessings of Sri Guru, how much we are dependent on that mercy. We are unlimitedly dependent on that mercy. Therefore, we worship the spiritual master at every minute. And what does that mean practically? That means we worship the orders received from the spiritual master. If I say I worship spiritual master, but I don't follow his instructions, what kind of worship is that? I love you, Guru Maharaj, but I don't obey you. That's bogus. If you truly love your guru, then you obey your guru. You see, love means obedience. If there's no obedience, there's no love. It's a show, that's all. Simply showbattle bhakti. If I truly love my guru, then I will obey his instructions. As Prabhupada points out in the Chaitanya Charitamrita purport, one should worship the order received from the spiritual master. You don't only follow his orders, you worship his orders. They become worshipable deities, you see, every single order. Just like as I mentioned last night, Papa gave me a wonderful order. He said, now you just qualify yourself to see Krishna face to face. So, in our present state, we look at the deity and we see a statue. But we hanker to be able to look at the deity and see Krishna directly, you see. We go beyond that statue and actually see Krishna and actually look into the whole spiritual world. The pastimes of Krishna are fully manifested right here on the altar, you see, for those who have the eye to see. So this is one order, but Prabhupada's books are full of so many orders that are meant for each and every one of us. And people follow these orders with to the best of our ability, with enthusiasm, with determination and patience. Then our spiritual life will become very, very solid, very, very progressive, very, very ecstatic. And we will be fixed in these items of knowledge automatically. without having to worry about memorizing the list. Of course, memorizing the list is also good. But if you can capture the essence, which is to become a pure devotee under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, then you're, as popularly said, then you're called an educated person, knowledgeable person. So we have about 30 seconds left. Are there any questions? Maybe one question. I was allowed to go. Oh, I already went overtime at 15 minutes. Well, it's not my fault. It was a long prayer. Go ahead. I'm somewhat deaf, so.
Don't become a wise guy.
Guru Maharaj chastises, don't become a wise guy?
So what does it mean?
What does that mean? That means a smart aleck. In other words, thinking that you're, you know, I'm the hottest pandit this side of the Ganga, you know, like that Digvijay pandit, you know. Thinking that you're Mr. Know-it-all, that you know more than anybody else. Don't become proud of your knowledge. It's good to be knowledgeable. But if you become proud of your knowledge, you're violating the first principle of knowledge. The very first principle of knowledge is to be humble and thinking, actually, my position, I am a complete ignorant fool. Just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his Guru Maharaj wanted to make sure that he did not misunderstand. He said, you're a complete idiot. You're a total, complete fool. Your only hope is to chant Hare Krishna. So, don't become a wise guy means, don't think that you may know something, but you don't think you really know very much. Just feel humbly dependent on Guru, Krishna, and Vaishnavas for your knowledge. I know Krishna does this to me again and again, you know. It's like I was asked to sing Mangal Arati this morning. I'm in Austin, I sing it every day, but I was in Vrindavan and I wasn't singing it for quite some time, just singing along, you know. So then I get scared, I think, oh my God, what if I forget one of the verses, you know. And I just humbly play, Krishna, you know, I don't know much, I'm just depending on you to give me the next verse, you know. So in that way, I whenever I'm asked to go to a temple and I'm asked to lead a kirtan, I get nervous and I just have to say, Krishna, I'm in your hands, it's up to you, whether the next verse comes or it doesn't come. Please help me, Krishna, you know. So in this way, even though that Krishna will give us knowledge, we should never feel that, yeah, I have this knowledge. As soon as you feel that you have the knowledge, then you'll lose it. We always feel, actually, I'm just a complete ignorant idiot. Krishna, please help me to remember. Then we will have a knowledge. So that's one example. So anyway, I think we'll stop here. And I do have a special treat. We have our Radha Damodar deities are here on the altar beneath that wonderful lotus flower there. And I have their Mahaprasadam here. Everyone can come and get some Radha-Damodar Mahaprasad. Grantha-Raja-Vidya-Srimad-Bhagavad-Gita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna, you're the first in line for the mercy. Always maintain this ego. Hare Krishna.